Hello, this is David Collins, and welcome to BitNote. We'll be talking about video game music, but for this show, we've actually got a guest who's currently developing a video game. So, welcome to the show. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Glenn Moran. I'm the programmer and co-designer of Tesla! Exclamation mark, or Tesla the game, as we call it. It's a platform game, kind of a run-and-gun style thing that's been developed for the iPhone, iPad and Android markets currently, with obviously the option to release on other platforms like the Mac and PC when we get around to it. I do the programming for the game. That means I'm the one that's trying to make our hero run around on the screen and interact with, well, shoot the monsters and creatures that he encounters and hopefully save the day.
So you're the programmer, so without you it would just be a bunch of pretty art on a screen not doing anything.
It probably would, but it'd be very, very pretty art. Our graphics artist Michael is quite the whiz with 3D, but well, let's say it wouldn't be quite as exciting if he was just standing statically there.
Okay, so that's great. So the game is like a run and gun, right?
It's a run and gun shooting style game, a little bit like old 8-bit games or indeed arcade games like Contra or the Total Recall video game or some of the old video game adaptations that I would have played when I was younger.
The game has a somewhat interesting protagonist, right?
Yes, well, after a very brief, we sat down, having decided to work on a game, on a platform game, and tried to think about, you know, what style or type or background of a game we'd like to make. At some point, I just sort of sat down and blurted out, Nikola Tesla, robot monsters from space, lightning bolts, who's with me? And that was pretty much the start and end of the of the process of developing the core concept of the game. Nikola Tesla is, and I'll be crucified if I get my history wrong on this, but I think he was a Croatian-born American immigrant. He moved to the States when he was, I think, in his late teens or early 20s. Found work with the Edison company, the Edison Electrical Company, and I forget exactly when and where he got his qualifications, but he studied in college. He studied, electrical engineering and science in university, and went on to become one of the greatest, I suppose, unsung scientific geniuses of his age, or indeed several ages following. He's known for a number of things, a lot of them quite unfortunate. There was an incident in the, I think it was the World's Fair, where he, thanks to some interference from a rival, from his rival actually, Thomas Edison, electrocuted an elephant to death. He is credited with inventing the radio. He is credited with inventing a death ray. There are other unsubstantiated rumours that he invented an earthquake generator. He was the mad scientist, but a mad scientist who was not so much trying to take over the world as ensure the world would become a better place. Anything he designed and developed, he did so with the intent of putting an end to war, you know, through the let's say came across the concept of mutually assured destruction a lot earlier than people, you know, think it was developed as a concept. There are rumours and stories that of earthquakes in and around his laboratory when he was working on this supposed earthquake machine. There's way too much. I mean, we could talk for the better part of 2 hours about the stuff he got up to. As I think I mentioned, he hung out with Mark Twain, himself and Mark Twain, just, you know, hung out casually, chatting, shooting the breeze, about and discussing, you know, ways to make the world a better place by humongously destructive application of science. So, in the environment of, you know, a robot invasion, there are far worse people to have as a protagonist than a guy who invented electric death rays.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So a larger than life figure and a rich source of inspiration.
Basically, it kind of, when it came to figuring out what kind of weapons or destructive devices we'd have in a game, because, you know, any game needs to have weaponry in it if it's going to be
a nice
a shooter.
Yeah.
His, let's say, his track record of inventions pretty much wrote everything we needed to worry about there.
Whoa. That's fun. Why don't we move on to your first... You've brought it with you, a selection of music for us to play of some of your favourite video game music. So why don't we start with a pretty interesting one, the last level you will ever play by Danny B from a... Well, from a game which we'll talk about in a second. And that was The Last Level You Will Ever Play by Danny B. It was from the video game Fathom, which is actually kind of an indie game which you can just play directly online on a browser as long as you've got Flash Player installed. It's a fun little game, actually. It sets you up, making you think it's just a standard run and gun, but then a twist comes, and I don't want to actually spoil it, but it certainly goes in an interesting direction. The game Fathom is made by Adam Atomic, who is also known for the very popular indie game Cannibalt, which we'll talk about some other time, because there is something to talk about. But back to Glenn Moore and his game, Tesla the Game, which he is currently developing for a variety of platforms. So, why don't you start by telling us, I mean, what do you do? Do you develop the game full-time, or...?
No, I actually develop the game on a bus, primarily. I work in software testing. That's my day job. I actually work in testing e-learning software. And my commute is about 1.5 to 2 hours each way each day.
Whoa.
Yeah. But, well, you know, you can't really complain. But as a result, it gives me plenty of time to work on the game. So I decided pretty much when I started this that... rather than sitting on a bus staring at the back of the head of the person in front of me, I'd rather be doing something productive. So each morning I get up, I go down, I catch my bus, I open up the laptop and start programming away on it. And each evening I'll get an email from Michael and we'll discuss the parts of the game or the elements that need to be worked on. I'll make my notes on them and get started on them the next day and the next day on the bus. And usually how it'll work is I'll put together the broad bits of code in the morning and then when I'm slightly more awake in the evening, actually make some sense of them and then pass it on back to Michael whenever I get finished with it.
Okay, so it's kind of like, so there's, you don't actually meet Michael in person, it's just through email?
Primarily through email and occasionally through Skype. We've got a pretty good... you know, working synergy going on. We're both on the same wavelength in terms of what we want the game to be and how we want the game to look. Michael looks after the graphics, and as I said, I look after the code. And apart from the occasional discussion about how a certain thing should look, feel, or work, we kind of leave each other to our respective devices. It's, as I understand it, that's quite unusual. An awful lot of teams do tend to need to meet up. So I think I certainly feel very lucky that I'm working with somebody who understands what it is I'm trying to achieve and makes it easy for me to understand what he's trying to achieve. And there's no kind of tension between us in that respect. We're both, you know, on the same wavelength, and, you know, he cracks the whip when it needs to be cracked. And I would if it ever needed to be cracked, but he's always way ahead of me.
So how did you, the two of you, get together in the first place and get developing this game?
We met as part of the CPD scheme, the mm-hmm. Continuing Professional Development scheme. It's I think it's an extension of the FOSS, but it's a kind of back to education thing. At the time, I had previously worked in the games industry in games testing for a number of years. A very, very enjoyable job. Loved it, but I suppose the stereotype is not untrue. It is a difficult job with long hours and a lot of overtime, and that wasn't really the right work-life balance for me. Mm-hmm. And I had, you know, two young sons who mm-hmm. I was not seeing as a result of it. You know, crunch time is an accepted part of the industry. It goes on for a long time, but it can make things very difficult. So I figured I'd, you know, move on from there. But unfortunately, then the economy went down the toilet. And
doesn't help.
Pretty much simultaneously. And I found difficulty getting another job. So I enrolled onto this scheme and met Michael in that. It was a year-long part-time course in DIT, which I would highly recommend to anybody, in games design and ludology. It was a small class, actually. There's only a few of us in it. But towards the end of it anyway, myself and the other guys in the course started talking about, mm-hmm. you know, designing or developing a game. And from there, myself and Michael kind of went on to turn it into reality. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just turned out we had the right blend of skill sets. He knew the graphics and, well, I hesitate to say that I know the code, but I have a grasp of the code and know just enough to be dangerous with it.
Cool. And you had a few members in the team, but that didn't...
It didn't really work out that well. The larger teams, the more people you've got in a team, the more difficult it is to, I suppose, find work for everybody and for everybody to keep up with what's right. going on. I mean, they made a fantastic effort at it, but it wasn't working out for us as a group, and the tension started to arise. So we kind of, I was actually myself ready to walk away from the whole thing.
Whoa.
But Michael persuaded me to, you know, carry on with it. So basically the whole thing very, very nearly went the way of, well, I think the majority of these kind of group projects. But Michael, you know, persuaded me that it would be foolish to walk away after all the work that, mm-hmm. you know, we put into it. We've had, let's say, some ups and downs with it. I mean, there are frustrations in it when you're working on a piece of code for a certain length of time and it just will not work. Or you finish it, worse still, you finish it and it's not actually suitable for purpose. And or, you know, or worse still, you didn't comment it when you were going through it and you try to go back and change something and...
Yeah. What idiot wrote this?
oh no, it was me.
Yeah, I know that feeling. All right.
So since then, you know, things have actually gone very smoothly for the last couple of months, and you know, it's been
cool,
making great progress on it. But it is a long process, especially when you don't actually have the time to work on it, you know, for several hours a day. I find myself with programming, it's one of those things that it's far easier to do a 4-hour mm-hmm. long session of it and make progress than, let's say, if you do 4 1-hour sessions, you won't get nearly as much done or even half as much done as 1 4-hour session. But I can't mm-hmm. you know, put that kind of time into it.
I think everyone's got their own different coding methodologies and that, but yeah, I can see, because you got everything fresh in your mind. So who else is in the team? Is there anyone else then?
So apart from Michael Wincian and myself, there's we've brought in a writer, name of Brian Nesbitt. He's been published a couple of times in role-playing game supplements. Then a friend of mine called Andrew Shields, or Drew Shields, actually, as everyone knows him, is giving us a hand with the marketing side of things, both of whom are avid gamers, for a very, very long time. Actually, I've known them for, oh, Lord, I'm going to feel old now, like well over a decade at this stage. I think, actually, Andrew was telling me that he's become immune to some of the stuff I talk about from by virtue of, 18 odd years of knowing each other. God, that is too long. Anyway, so they're taking care of the aspects of the game that we just do not have the skill set for, indeed the attention span for.
And that's great.
It does no harm. You know, when you're doing it's a bad idea to try and do everything yourself. That's why we've drawn a fairly clear line of responsibility down between, the graphics and the code. Otherwise, you're just going to end up taking on the tasks that seem the easiest to you at the time.
All right. And what about the music?
Musically, one of the cardinal sins of indie games is that the music tends to get left until the very, very last thing. And we're thoroughly guilty of that one. So I think it's one of the tunes that I like is Toccata, which has been remixed for Revenge of the Titans. And that's the kind of style that we're going to be going with. I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan of classical music, but I do enjoy it. Not necessarily as much as ska, but given the chance, I will listen to some of the more famous tunes, and they're just as good now as they ever were. So, given that a lot of these songs come from the same era or of an appropriate era to Tesla, it seemed like a good idea to go with remixing some of them with a more modern, maybe electrical feel to them, to couple in or to tie into the obviously electrical based theme of the game.
So the game is going to have, like, you're aiming for like a mix of styles. It's going to be slightly classical because that was the era of Nicholas Telsa. It's going to be frantic with a lot of, running, gunning, just dealing with the aliens. And it's also going to be, electric, so sort of funky with all the crazy contraptions and massive, larger than life battles that are going on.
In short, yes. That's pretty well sums it up.
Well, why don't we move on to that track you were just talking about, Toccata. We'll be right back. And that was Takata from the game Revenge of the Titans by Puppy Games. Revenge of the Titans is a very fun little tower defense game where you build bases and have to make sure the defenses stop the aliens from invading. If you know your classic music, you'll recognize that as being from Takata and Fugue in D minor, originally by Johann Sebastian Bach. That remix was made by a guy who goes by the name Dave SB. And of course, at the moment, we're talking with Glenn Moran, who's developing an iPhone game. And, you know, of course, it's not just you. You're not the only one who's like... a lot of games are made by big studios, but, you know, they're not the only ones making games these days, right?
Oh, absolutely. The days of what they used to be called bedroom developers are pretty well on the comeback at the moment. I suppose a couple of years ago, there were games like Worms, which were... Well, actually, I think Worms was one of the last to come out of somebody's... you know, home PC before big developers and producers largely devoured the market for a very long time. But in the last couple of years, the software to make games has developed to the point, or been developing towards people with little to no programming knowledge and in favour of people who just want to design a game. The software we're using is called Unity, which is on the which is on the more complex end of the spectrum. There's a free version available, or you can spring $1,500, I think it is, for the pro version for additional features. But if you're looking to make a game, Unity allows you to make gorgeous 3D or 2D or whatever type of game you want, really, for absolutely nothing. There's a number of other resources available. Cira Construct, that's scirra.com, that they make a game that's a development environment. It's purely two-dimensional, but it requires absolutely zero programming language to use. It's an entirely graphical interface. So if you want to say, you know, when I have pushed down the W button, move the character to the left, you literally drag and drop elements of the of its interface to make up those commands. A very similar product is Game Maker by Yo-Yo Games. So these resources are out there. They make making games very easy. They put it completely within the reach of anybody who decides they want to make a game. It's not as easy as people think it is, but it's not as hard as people think it is either.
You still have to come up with the ideas and the art and the whole game and a lot of aspects, but it's not just for people who can just know assembly and know the inner workings of a CPU. This is just for people who know how they want the game to behave.
Basically, yes. If you have an idea and a basic grasp of the logic behind computers, if and when else, all those different commands, which are really simple, logical things to describe, once you understand that, you can use either of these two to make a fully fledged 2D game. Start off with something simple like a platformer. A lot of people start off, they think, oh, I'm going to make the next World of Warcraft. No, you're not. Not without a budget in the tune of several million euro, 50 or 60 people in your staff, you're not going to make anything a hundredth the size of that. But you can sit down, you can make a platformer, you can learn the system, you can make something nice and quick and easy and work from that and make something great. There's games out there like that have incredibly simple concepts but have sold hundreds of thousands of copies. VVVVVV, Braid, Limbo, really simple concepts behind them, but they were put together by people who knew what they were doing, they had a solid idea behind what they wanted to do, and they just did it. These tools exist, they let you make the game you want to make.
Okay. And do you have any little bugbears about certain developers out there?
Yeah, people not finishing their sodding games. There are a huge number of beautiful ideas out there, or remakes of old games that are half finished. Now, I've done this myself.
It's a very easy trap to fall into.
Yeah.
I've heard some game developers say, you know, finishing is a skill.
Exactly. And I don't know, it seems like you're letting people down. I really look forward to these games, and then I never get the opportunity to play these fantastically creative ideas that don't reach fruition because people just get bored of it or sick of it. And as you said, finishing is a skill. The last 10% of a game is what will take up 90% of your time, and you need to understand that going into any kind of development.
So, game development, it does have its tricky bits, and it does require commitment, but at the same time, there are a lot of tools that can just make a lot of it a lot easier. You can fly into it, and it should be everyone who feels that they really want to make a game should give it a go.
Exactly. There's no real excuse not to give it a try. Those products I mentioned before, they're all free.
I think we're just about running out of time now. Do you want to give? Obviously, your game is not available just yet. It's still in development. But would you like to give some details about where people can find information about the game and what you plan for the future?
Well, everything you need to know about the game can be found on or linked from teslathegame.com, T-E-S-L-A, thegame.com. It's got screenshots, links to videos, any information that you might need there. Obviously, news updates will appear there according as we make our progress with it. If all goes well when we finish this game, there are a number of unfinished prototypes sitting on my hard drive for other games. Haven't really thought that far ahead of just finishing the game because, well, you know, probably not a good idea to plan for the next one when you haven't finished the first. Yeah, we've got a bunch of ideas. There's a lot of old games out there, a lot of old game styles that have been neglected over the last couple of years. We'd love to try and bring them back. Dungeon Master, Eye of the Beholder games, Cannon Fodder, all those classic old brilliant little games that haven't seen much love over the last decade are the kind of things we want to visit and try and recreate the experience that they brought.
All right. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. We've talked a lot about what game development is like out there. And to finish up, I think we'll choose the third music track you picked. It's from the Portal 2 soundtrack made by Valve. It's called Robots FTW, which if you are slightly out of phase with internet slang, basically means robots for the win. And it's composed by Mike Morrisky, who I talked about last week when I was playing the Team Fortress 2 theme. So, I'll leave it at that. Thank you for listening. This has been David Collins with BitNote.